Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
There's a difference?
Yes.
Farm-raised and wild leeches?
So I recently got leeches. I got leeched for the show I do on Super Deluxe.
I know, and everyone was so... People were asking, like, yo, why is her, like, lip is a mess, like, still bleeding? I think it just works that way.
You bleed for... So another fun fact, when we recorded Santa University, I was still losing a lot of blood. I had a diaper strapped to the front of me while we were recording Santa University.
Jesus.
So, and
you are a true warrior because you didn't mention this blood diaper one bit, and you powered through that reading like it was any other day.
I was also bleeding while I wrote Santa University, which I think really shows in the content. I was losing a lot of blood. But
bleeding because you did a leech thing for Super Deluxe. What was the leech thing?
So the leech thing is that, like, it's like this old kind of ancient practice where leeches can, in theory, they suck out like toxins out of your blood and like remove blood clots. It works like a blood thinner. Right. And then they spit in leech stuff. I think government
leeches.
Yeah. The leech state.
It's a little bit of a Black Mirror, mm-hmm, if you will. Mm-hmm. But the leech. So no one told me that after you are leeched, because I was leeched in my, I had two leeches in my belly button, three leeches on my face, one leech on my tongue. And no one tells you that you bleed for 18 hours just freely.
Really?
Afterwards. My face had clotted by the time we recorded Santa University, thankfully.
Yeah.
But I still had a diaper strapped to my front because my belly button was really, I was losing a lot of blood that day.
Wow.
And when you say this, I'm just picturing you because you weren't sure how to address this blood thing. So you just straight up bought a diaper and like duct taped the shit to your stomach.
Yeah.
Not like any like a proper gauze or anything. You're just like, fuck it. I'm going to put a diaper on the front.
The leech lady was like, I was like, what should I? She's like, you're going to need a diaper.
Really?
Yeah. She was like, you got to get a pack of diapers.
Diapers are actually super useful in just everyday stuff. They absorb everything.
Do you use them as like paper towels?
Yeah. Right? I've used them as paper towels. I've just put them on my back so I don't sweat through my shirt.
No,
my
way to
hell
work.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had my son's like a diaper in my car, and I was just like, "Yo, I'm sweating through my shirt. I need to." And my grandfather was a basketball coach, and he was like a real sweaty dude, and he was tired of ruining his suits, so he would like put diapers under his arms. And one time he was freaking out on the refs, and like foam just started coming out of the sleeves of his suit because he sweat so much that the diaper dissolved. That is how sweaty my bloodline is.
Oh my god, dude! I'm good.
Oh, there's so many diaper secrets coming out.
Oh yeah, hit us on Twitter with some more diaper hacks because I'm sure, aside from the obvious things of being so absorbent, there are many other uses for diapers.
Yeah. So the lifespan of a domestic, because the reason now the leeches are my pets. Because the leech lady was, I was like, well, what are you going to do with the leeches? And she's like, well, they can only survive on your blood. So if you don't take them with you, I'm going to throw them in a vat and they'll dissolve.
Oh, my God.
I was like, well, the stakes rose very quickly. Yeah. And so I was like, well, I'll take the leeches. And so now I need to go. They can live up to 10 years, but they can only feed on my blood. They can't feed on anyone else's blood. So,
once you blood them.
I don't know. But that's what she said. She was like, you have to, like, it's someone else's blood. It won't work. So leeches can live off of a single feeding for like a year, and then usually they'll just die. But I can keep them alive with my diaper blood.
Oh, wow.
If I want.
Wow. He's gonna wring out that diaper.
It sounds like you want.
Then I saw The Shape of Water, and it was, you know, women falling in love with a sea urchin. Right. And I was like, it's basically me and my leeches.
It's your life.
Also, all adult leeches are women. And so I just feel like
that's
sisterhood.
Kind of,
yeah.
I got to feed them.
They're your dragons.
They're my little dragons.
You are the Khaleesi of leeches.
Khaleesi.
Hey! Another development, as of Monday, yesterday, weed is now legal in California.
Hell yeah, bro.
Sick.
Sickest day of my life.
I'm going to have to become a weed cop now. This is my Black Mirror.
So I have not partaken in many a year.
Wow.
So cool.
Officer O'Brien.
Right. So I am curious, like, how this will affect, like, will this change how you acquire and consume marijuana?
No.
No.
I mean,
you don't think so?
I think already, like, right, like in California, we've already been operating in this like gray area of like really easy to obtain medical marijuana licenses.
Right.
That essentially, true, if you really wanted to go to a dispensary, you could just get the, you can Skype a doctor on your cell phone, tell him you can't sleep.
He's like, and, I hurt.
Yeah. And like the guys, like, dude, some of the guys are like in their own beds. I don't know if you've seen everyone,
really?
Someone ever Skype call a weed doctor to get their card. Like some of these guys are so fucking lazy. It's amazing.
Oh, I love it.
But yeah. That you can just go and you can still get like the top shelf medical weed at the place with just a card. But like, I guess now, you know, some places like with all the state and local tax supply, like you could be paying like 45% tax on like this legal weed. So a lot of like people are like, yo, just get the card. You're not going to pay the taxes to avoid the taxes. I think also if you just know, like most people know somebody to get weed. I don't know how much it's going to change, but I think it'll, as they figure out all the regulations and make it easier for people to just pop in,
right?
I think then, yeah, I think people will probably maybe go to the store to get their legal weed. But
right. You're saying that my experience with weed in college, where it was just like whoever could get you a bag of like really shitty like seeds and stems, was not indicative of what it's like to buy weed now. And
no, because I mean, like even like weed is just so cheap. Right now, too, in California, because like it's because of like the medical marijuana industry and things like that, it's not as crazy as it used to be in terms of like what the most expensive weed is now. And I think, yeah, for this, I think it's, this is good for people who are like have a lot of money and not any cool friends, that then that now they can just go to the weed store and pay like a markup on weed. But I think the biggest thing too is like the amount of tax revenue that it will bring in. I think that's the most exciting thing because, you know, we are now the largest legal weed market in the country.
I'm excited to see the stupid, cheesy, like weed advertising. I've already been enjoying like the very like pouty model weed billboards of like, there's like one outside of 7-Eleven I frequent, obviously, where it's like these pouty hot kids, not like kids, but like, you know, cool teens,
uh-huh,
and it says like, it's legal now, relax. And I was like,
what?
Why are these teenagers so pouty and high?
Right.
I love it. It's great.
Yeah, is it going to be like, is it going to replace alcohol in terms of like advertising and like lame old people, like the way they treat wine? Is it going
to
be?
God, I'd love to see those print ads. It's like everyone's just like on their face on a couch. It's like, dude, check out the new OG Kush.
I'm not good at weed.
You're not good at weed?
I'm not good at weed. I try. I can smoke, but with like every time I do edibles, I fully am just like, I'm going to run into traffic. This is it.
Oh, wow.
I had weed nachos not too long ago.
Sounds like peak
and
stoner.
I'm 99%. I peed myself that night. 99%. I was like, this is actually, I needed a diaper.
Well, just shift. Yeah, just shift your stomach diaper. And you got one on you.
I had enough diapers. There was no excuse.
You're just so high, you didn't even know how to work it. You're like, I don't know. Strapped to my back.
All right. So as we mentioned, I had a very cool New Year's where I watched a lot of New Year's Eve coverage. I was frustrated. Like on the West Coast, you can't see the ball drop live except for like
a, you can't?
Really?
Like, a feed online. It was the only place I found it.
Oh,
basically.
Weird.
Yeah.
Oh, because they really want to keep you
locked
into.
Yeah. So they have like a feed that says live on it, and it's actually like 3 hours earlier on the East Coast. It's really annoying.
There's nothing that. Is
why
that
can't
legal?
We just get
There's
like a West Coast? Why can't we get? Let's get our own.
Yeah, exactly. So this was my frustration, but apparently, so CNN apparently had the like hottest New Year's party going down. Anderson Cooper, mm-hmm, and Andy Cohen were chilling, and it was apparently like really edgy and offended a lot of conservatives and like parents who were watching with their kids
because of the two of them or just other shit.
Well, so. The two of that, there was a lot of drug shit going on. So there was a segment that is getting the bulk of the attention where they like through to a reporter who was live in Colorado celebrating New Year's Eve at a puff and paint party where people like smoke weed and paint.
Oh, God, there's nothing worse than a paint night. God. Nothing.
Fucking animals.
Nothing.
And, I don't even know what a paint night is, but.
Ugh, I'll scream about it later.
Okay. And she like had marijuana earrings on and like lit somebody's gas mask bomb and was seen holding a marijuana cigarette.
No.
A
jazzy cig.
And because of that, my child has now turned into a marijuana pipe.
Right. which I think people are overreacting to. There was a weird moment though where Andy Cohen, let's listen to it. I think we have a clip.
Well, it's about 11 degrees here in Times Square, but it feels like 10 or 9, I'd say.
I agree,
yeah,
actually.
I'd say 10 or 9.
How's this heat going?
The heat is,
is it surging?
This part of me feels very hot. The rest of me feels very cold, so I feel very unbalanced.
You sound like you're on heroin or something.
What is that? How does that even sound like?
Isn't it like waves of heat or something like that?
Oh, that's what you're referencing.
I don't know anything about it.
What?
Good save. I don't know anything about heroin.
I wouldn't know anything.
I don't know.
I just speak knowledgeably about what it's like to be on heroin.
And then putting you on the spot, like, right? And you're like, dude, what? Nah, I don't know anything about that.
So that
make
was
Anderson Cooper
Anderson
have to
Cooper
deny.
Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, who's the former E! Executive, who then became like an on-air personality. And yeah, he was apparently super rough like the whole time. He just like, and I noticed that actually in a couple of the broadcasts that I watch, that people were, it was so cold, people like couldn't think straight.
Right.
We're just like having trouble. Like the Fox production was a disaster. Like obviously Steve Harvey is always
just a mess.
The best, but, yes. But everything else, it was just a mess. Yeah, but I don't know. I can kind of see where some conservatives are coming from. If they focused on the heroin comment, the weed things, I don't know.
I mean, sure, you don't,
that's,
I guess,
yeah.
Because they've been really like strict about showing people straight up smoking weed on TV.
Right.
So like doing like a hard cut to someone doing a gas mask bong hit on a CNN thing, I think would be jarring for some people. I can see how if you were like a very like strict parent who wanted
watching
to shelter
with your kids. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're like, suddenly they're like, what's that? And you're like,
I think that if you were like watching with your kids, like that would be what would stand out more than Andy Cohen's weird heroin comment.
Yeah. That was just like a random thing that someone like pointed out on Reddit. And I was like, wow, what a fucking
That's so fun. Cause it's like, of course Andy Cohen's tried heroin.
Yeah.
Right.
But also it's like, you could feel like, I'm sure the two of them like have partied together and they're probably just sort of like, look, bro, when we do this, like you can't just be saying crazy shit like you do when we're not being broadcast on TV.
Right.
Like, talking about me being like people on heroin.
Right. Super producer Anna Hosnier has just entered the recording booth after spending the morning recording a batch pod, bachelor podcast. You are a bachelor expert. And
that is correct.
That is not what we're going to talk to you about.
But worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Worth mentioning. Just to set this segment up.
I wanted to sort of get a primer from you on the Iranian protests and just like, how do you feel about them? What's going on over there?
Okay, so currently what's happening in Iran, there's protests that are coming up, mostly from poorer communities within Iran.
Right.
And a lot of it's based off domestic issues. So right now there's a very high unemployment rate. The cost of living has like skyrocketed. Like the cost of eggs has risen like 40% in the last year. So people are just like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And people truly believe that the government is way too focused on what's going on in Syria and Palestine and not what's actually going on in the country and what the people are dealing with like every day. They're at this point taking away money from welfare programs and then giving this money to like religious groups or like the mullahs and the religious clerics who, you know, are kind of the people that run the country on the back end, you know.
Right.
A lot of, you know, Rouhani is the president, but the supreme leader is the person who makes the ultimate decisions. So there's a
Snoke.
Lot of
supreme leader
Snoke.
Snoke.
Snoke. Yeah. Supreme leader Snoke.
Is that Andy Serkis?
Yes. Yeah. So the current supreme leader is Ali Khomeini, not to be confused with the original supreme leader Ruhollah Khomeini.
We weren't going to confuse but, him.
So he's currently the person who, if Rouhani wants to pass a law, it technically has to go through the Supreme Leader. The Supreme Leader is going to be like, hey, is it up to my religious standards?
And they're and calling that. For they're the calling death for- of both of them, right?
Yeah, but that's the thing is, the weird thing is, like, Iranians, when they start to overreact, they automatically jump to death.
It's like, it's not like impeach. Yeah. It's like, kill
just
this
like,
motherfucker.
Death to our president. And it's like, slow down. Because same thing, like, when it happened, they'd be like, death to America whenever we.
Oh, yeah, to the with, great like, Satan. I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, when Trump came into power, there was a lot of death to America, which is like, that's a lot of work, you know, you don't have time, you gotta really gotta worry about how much the price of the eggs are.
Priorities.
Yeah, eggs so, first. And, you know, when the sanctions were lifted because of this nuclear deal, the Iranian public were like, oh, perfect, this is gonna make it easier, sanctions are lifted, more things can come into our country, right. things will get cheaper.
Can interact more with the outside world.
Right, you know, like, textbooks are coming into the universities, and the students are actually, like, able to, like, do the research they want, and learn things, and discover things, and... like basically brain drain into the U.S. in the end, but that's most young Iranians. They're just trying to like
get to
learn
America.
All the stuff and then come to America. And so that didn't really do anything.
Right.
And Rouhani's like, oh, well, you know, the problem is that like everyone's corrupt. So there is a chance for this to go down, but all the money is basically being taken by like just people that work in the government and there's all this mismanagement and There's blatant corruption, but
right.
I have to say alleged corruption because right. my family does live in Iran, and if I ever go to Iran, I'm not trying to get arrested and used as like a political bargaining tool, mm-hmm. which this is not a great idea for me to be talking on this podcast. But anyway, yeah, so that is
the
basis of what a lot of it is, and a lot of women's rights issues.
Right.
Like these women are out here fighting. Like it's actually really amazing because these women can be put in solitary confinement
right.
and spend the rest of their lives and never see their family. They could get public lashings, like literally hung up on the streets and lashed for the public to come see.
Right.
Like that's the level of intensity of trouble you can get into. So I think it's very important, like what they're doing and how they're like putting themselves out there and fighting for what they believe in because technically they live under a regime.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Because right. was Rouhani like seen as sort of like a reformer? Too, like to kind of like bring in, like
yes.
usher in a slightly new era in Iran?
He is like the liberal as you
right,
can
right,
to
right.
be an Islamic Republic
okay.
president. Like they were like, he's on Twitter. Like right, that blew right. people's minds. Like they were like, this dude can tweet. And a lot of the top officials were educated in America and then
right.
went back to Iran. So like Javad Zarif, the foreign minister, educated in America. That's why he's always out here on Twitter. Like,
yeah. His clapback game is real.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. If you say, if anyone like Nikki Haley or anyone says anything about Iran, this guy is literally sitting there.
He's got
like
240 characters
yeah,
waiting.
He's got drafts on drafts on drafts to be like, right. all right, that's that. So, yeah, that's a bit of an, you know, that's what's going on.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because, like you said, it started with all these sort of grievances about the economy and, like, the
right.
like what the day-to-day life was. And then slowly, like, it started in, like, these very conservative parts of Iran, which are – like, I think it was the Ayatollah who was trying to say that these were like fake protests or people trying
right.
to divide the people. But then it spread so quickly. And then like the messages really started changing to be about so much more. And you're starting to see like the people there are really, they're not really waiting for this like very small, slow, incremental change. Like it seems like the Iranian
yeah.
people really want to like participate in the world more freely and just have
right.
like a more modern country.
It's interesting because they don't want the Shah to come back because they don't want that world of like we're basically run by America. But
right.
at the same time, they don't want this aggressive like religious cleric looking over them and being like, no,
right,
you
right,
can't
right.
have that. And no, I won't answer your questions because I'm literally a supreme leader, which
right.
is like, yeah,
right.
okay.
Yeah, that's like some Disney
I don't,
universe shit.
Like I said, I don't know if this will actually lead to change because it is a regime and they can silence people. And in
right.
my experience, when I've been in Iran and watched the news there, oh, it is just delusional, the shit they're putting out there.
Mm.
Like, you are literally watching a, like, just propaganda and just fake news. Like, they are the kings of fake news over there because they are just putting, they'll say there's a protest going on and then they'll play the same clip over and over again. And then they'll tell you the protest is like, it's a march for like happiness. And you're
oh
just like,
God.
What?
God.
These people are screaming. They're
yeah,
like,
they
no, they're screaming
happy.
Good
they're
things.
They're stoked.
Yeah. And then you're like, okay. Cause I've had actual, like, I've watched and I've been like, what? This is confusing. Then my cousins literally go, oh no, this is all fake. This
right.
is an Iranian news station. You're not going to see the truth.
Right.
And then I was like,
Ooh.
Where am I?
You know?
So Trump is openly advocating for the protesters, which seems like a surprisingly cool thing for Trump to do.
Yeah, but I also think he's just trying to rile up the situation because it goes against the Iranian government. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think he's on anyone's side. I think he's just trying to fuel a fire.
I mean, as long as you're not protesting him.
Right.
Yeah. He's for it. He's like, yeah, not me. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, but I mean, like last week they were like, death to Trump, you know? Right. That's quick to
Well, because I think, like, what, two people were killed already, right? Like, were shot?
20. Okay.
Oh, 20?
Yeah. It's because, yeah, they're saying that they are attacking. The thing is, they won't explain how they die. They just say they're dead.
Right.
That's the weird thing. They will never reveal how the deaths
happen. A minute ago, somebody tweeted, 12 News tweeted, 6 days of Iran protests, 20 dead, 450 arrested.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and also it can't be very helpful for someone that the country openly hates to be like, love what you're doing over there. Yeah. Like, that's right. Just not.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. Deflating.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go to a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. There's this article in a outlet called The Outline associating this with a overall trend that they're seeing. Like, Miley Cyrus had her big, run of appropriation. And then last year, apparently, she released a country pop album where she was wearing her, like, cowboy hat all over the place. And Lady Gaga released a more, like, stripped down, authentic album that was less, like, poppy and more, like, piano music. And she was wearing a cowboy hat. So there's, like, something with this cowboy culture, like, being seen as more authentic for white artists. Mm-hmm. And I had actually just read a really interesting run on Twitter from Robin Panaccia. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. She's a writer for Wonkette, and she talks about how there's this, like, big conspiracy. We had actually written about it, Cracked, but I totally forgot about it, about how in the early 20th century, Henry Ford, one of the wealthiest crazy anti-Semite racists to ever have just all the money in the world, decided he wanted to launch a campaign to give white people a type of music and dancing. Because he was worried about the influence of jazz and R&B.
Which he had an interesting name for that, right?
Yeah, he called it, like, jungle music with, like, monkey howls or something.
Jungle boogie.
Yeah. And so he actually, like, started a campaign where he tried to make square dancing popular. Like, he basically invented square dancing. It's only, like, 40, 50 years old. And, like, started paying schools to put it in their PE curriculum. Yeah. Did you take square dancing in PE?
No. I did. And well, I didn't take it. I remember it was one day and, like, they brought out a fucking record player.
Yeah.
That's why one of my memories, because I was, like, 7 years old. Yeah. I'm like, a fucking record player?
Yeah.
And then it was, like, playing some, like, weird thing, and we were all confused, like, this is not
that
sports.
Was part of yeah. my education, yeah, but for, like, 2 days in gym class you had to, like, square dance, and, like, nobody enjoyed it. Like, it didn't really accomplish anything. But so the reason for that was all part of this conspiracy by a racist, Henry Ford, the car manufacturer, because he thought that, like, jazz was a Jewish conspiracy to make black music popular. And so, I don't know. It's just interesting that we're associating, cowboy hats and, you know, country music, which also was not originally white music.
Yeah, right.
That was a campaign by him to sort of make it. He basically backed the type of country music that was more associated with white people and back, like, white country artists. But it was an actual conspiracy to make white people like country music, and it worked, apparently.
We didn't have the square dance in elementary school, but we did the electric slide.
That's pretty
MPE
cool.
One day. That was fun. Coach Pat. Shout out to Coach Pat. Central Elementary School, Pascagoula, Mississippi. We We did the, you also misspoke. You said that square dancing is only 40 years old. You gotta remember this 2018, y'all. 40 years ago was 1978.
Yeah, okay. So 60 something years ago.
I think jungle music had taken over by that time. Yeah. It wasn't nothing they could do at that point.
It's too late.
Yeah. That's not a new thing though, man. You know, like, popular culture, hip hop culture is popular culture, and it has been since, I would say, probably the mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. It's crazy how
I would wager to say like
pattern.
The early 2000s when it really like,
yeah,
because like to me, like when Get Rich or Die Trying came out,
yeah,
that's when I was surprised at how many people were like, yo man, I fuck with 50 Cent. Yeah. And I was like, what?
You okay. Know what song is like the ultimate like white dude song that I don't even know the lyrics to? Forgot About Dre.
Oh.
I don't know the lyrics to that song. I don't know how it goes. I just know the hook.
Right, right.
But all of my white male friends know all the lyrics to Forgot About Dre. Yeah. Jack, do you know all the lyrics?
I know most of the lyrics. Yeah. Forgot About Dre. Yeah. That's like my favorite song, Carl.
That's okay, so maybe I believe you. That can be the year right there. 2001, when Forgot About Dre came out.
That was when it...
That's it. When hip-hop culture became...
Yeah, because I guess also Eminem, yeah. I think he really mainstreamed hip-hop for a lot of white people.
Yeah,
too.
I was going to... I mean, this kind of brings back to our overrated, because it does seem like there are some average-ass rappers who get very successful because they're white people.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's just as many mediocre black rappers, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess, but...
But it's we can be mediocre. Rap is the one thing that black people can be mediocre at. Everything else, we gotta be great at. You gotta be LeBron in the NBA. Right. You gotta be Cam Newton in the NFL. But you can be Kodak Black in hip-hop.
You can be Takeoff. You can be from Migos.
Takeoff is tight.
Is he your favorite? I think he's the weakest one.
He's not, I promise you. Listen to his catalog. Listen to Takeoff Essentials on Apple Music. Or wherever you get your music.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no Takeoff Essentials, but there is a list of like songs that he is the feature rapper on.
Right.
He's tight. And it's just a different, like, he raps like Offset, except
Offset.
Like, Offset is like records on records, I got it. Like, yeah, and then Takeoff is, oh, it's over there.
Yeah.
That's a different, it's typical. Like, right. it's a different tone, different cadence. I like them.
Mm-hmm. There's a article from the New Yorker that's talking about how China is viewing
Donald Trump
and our country by extension, and it's not very reassuring. He
wasn't the article just all the laughing cry face emojis?
Yes, it was just three pages of that just in a line. No, but so it talks about how at first they were, and I think this is actually a good sort of description of how everybody viewed him. At first, they were like, wow, he really pulled it off. He must be secretly like a genius.
Brilliant.
And they were like really, you know, worried. They thought he was going to, you know, take it to them. And then they met with him. That Mar-a-Lago visit where Trump came out and was like, I think she likes me.
Was that the chocolate cake time?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a chocolate lovely cake chocolate meeting. Cake. And his response after the meme was, I think he likes me. I think so. Maybe he hates me, but I think he likes me. It was like, what the fuck, man? Why are you so sweaty?
You can't pull up to like a sit down with that kind of energy.
And the Xi Jinping left the meeting being like, wow, he like takes everything literally. He doesn't.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, they were like...
he's like, I got these fortune cookies for everyone in honor of you, Xi Jinping.
They were just like taken aback by how like simple-minded and like how simple his view of Asia was, like how little he knew, and like the fact that he came out of the meeting was like, wow, this North Korea thing is really complicated. They were like... What, you didn't know that?
I feel like there's been an article like that for everything, right? Like there was, like he was like, "Wow, health insurance is actually pretty complicated."
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
This immigration thing's pretty complicated. Like, what the fuck did he think?
Right,
I think that's what appealed to so many people why they voted, because he's a simple.
Well, at least it's
like
relatable. This is complicated.
It's like, yeah, but we've been trying to tell you that for years, and they go, "We ain't want to listen to you."
Right. Yeah, and I mean, it's very easy to identify with. I certainly didn't know how complicated all that shit was.
Backs away from Jack again.
I'm outside.
I totally identify with Trump and his views. I've always said that. But so they're now viewing the Trump presidency as like a huge opportunity to become the leader on the world stage.
Yeah, because we're asleep.
Yeah. essentially. And it's sort of a national mood that's like sweeping through. This past summer, they had their most successful movie in the history of Chinese cinema. And it's just like a action movie. It was actually part two of the franchise. It's similar to, have you guys seen Rambo 2?
No.
Okay. So no. Rambo 1 was like a decent sized hit. Rambo 2 was this monster hit. And it was like, because it like in it, Rambo went back and won the Vietnam War. Like,
he goes back to Vietnam.
And like just defeats the entire Vietnamese army, like North Vietnamese army, by himself. And so it was like clearly like dealing with a wound that America had
in their unconscious.
And like, so it became like five times as successful as the first one. And this seems like a similar thing. This is a sequel to a just a standard action movie that became their most successful movie ever. And its climax is this Chinese action star beating an American to death. It's about China taking a bigger role on the national stage. They're like, he goes into, I think it's an African nation where there's like a uprising where they're trying to kill, you know, diplomats on the ground there. Mm-hmm. And they make a point of like, they, one of the people they're saving, is counting on the Americans to come through and save them. And
wow.
Like they call the American consulate and it's closed. Like, that's, like, a big plot point. So, like, everyone in China was like, fuck yeah! They're, like, super excited about this.
I hope when they get to the American consulate and it's closed, like, they're ringing the phone and you cut inside of it and all it is just, like, a black dude with headphones on mopping the floor and he can't hear the phone ringing.
Please, open up! I need to get in! Please, I'm American citizen!
He's just, like, whistling to himself. I be stroking!
Well, that's interesting because, like, also China's been, like, they've been way more active in Africa than the U.S. too, like, investing, building infrastructure. Like, you know, China's definitely, they know that America is asleep at the wheel, and now is a better time than ever to kind of reestablish, or not reestablish, but fully establish themselves as, like, a leader, because that's already kind of happening.
It is.
Especially with, like, they're being, like, somehow the leaders on climate change and other shit too. Like, we've sort of, I don't know, abandoned the throne.
Right. And they're... Because they're smart and diplomatic about things, they're not, like, openly coming out and being like, ha-ha, fuck you, America, like, you're fucking up. They're just quietly, like, taking over power. And then behind closed doors, this article says they're, like, acknowledging, like, China is now the new monolithic power.
But this was also being predicted by, like, economists since, like, the 80s, right? Like, you know, like, that by this time... That, like, China would be the world's biggest power, like, by 2020.
It's still pretty lopsided when you look at, like, the size of the economy.
Right.
Like, America's still way bigger. And this is speeding up a shift that people were seeing happening.
Right, right.
I had always read that China was eventually going to take over and it was inevitable. But when you actually look at the demographics, the reason China is having this, like, huge juggernaut economy is because of the one child policy.
Right.
And like basically the way their demographics stack out is that they have like a great what's called dependency ratio where they have way more working age people than they have retired and like babies.
Right.
And that usually helps an economy. Like that's almost a single indicator that you can see how successful a nation's economy.
Because our dependency ratio is not that great, right?
Our dependency ratio was great.
Was
great for a number of years because the baby boom was moving from 18 to 65. So the baby boom was moving through working age. And when you have a huge like glut of people who are working through that age, you're going to have a lot of economic success. The Chinese are just coming to the end of having the people who were the parents of the one child generation going through that stage. So they had like an artificially really strong dependency ratio, but now they're coming into the part where the working age people are the one child generation.
Right, right, right.
So they're going to have an artificially low, like an artificially bad dependency ratio. So it could go either way, but this is certainly not helping. And I don't know, with the North Korea stuff, it just seems like America's standing in the world like a There's been a war of tweets that we were referring to earlier with the button thing, but you know it just seems so clear now that you know people were always like Trump's playing chess and everyone else is playing checkers.
Yo, not even that. 4D chess, my man, if you're on some certain subreddits.
But so Kim Jong-un is driving a wedge between South Korea and the U.S. by like opening up relations and like opening up communication with between North Korea and South Korea. And Trump is responding to that by like bragging about the size of his button.
Right.
And, like how much his button works.
Yeah, because I know like with like North Korea, they're looking at it like, yo, if we can get America out of the picture, then we can just figure out our own reunification thing. I know Kim Jong-un in his mind thinks if America's out of the picture that he can somehow unite both Koreas and somehow Pyongyang can rule over both, which is a bit of a long shot. But at the very least, I think South Koreans also see a way of like having like a federation.
Right.
While keeping their like total unification agenda at bay.
A lot of our stick with like our carrot and stick with North Korea is like sanction based, and sanctions only work if you can get everybody else in the world to agree to like withhold. And so if he's, you know, striking up a relationship with South Korea and, you know, having a strong relationship with China, then America's not going to have any ability to negotiate.
Yeah, and I think as a country, we have a track record of showing like we really don't do shit when North Korea acts up. Like they took the USS Pueblo when like 1968, didn't do shit.
Right.
And all we do now are just like sanctions that China undermines. Who knows? I think maybe that's why they may look at Trump a bit differently because he's just so erratic. But if you look at sort of like the history of like, you know, what the U.S. response is to like North Korean provocations, it's typically just sort of sanctions that can be worked around or undermined.
Yeah. And this is kind of part of an overall trend where, I don't know, I've been struggling with this thing where I worry I'm underestimating Trump because I did during the election, but I don't know. And you still see that, like, in the comment sections of an article where Trump does something stupid, if it's not, like, on the New York Times, if it's a place where, you know, there are right-wing people, or Trump's, like, made his career off of, like, people underestimating him and, you know, just assuming that he has, like, a long game that he's playing. And I don't know, there's an article about the 68 election and how, you know, America has a long history of overreading election results. And, you know, we just like really focus in on elections as being these hugely significant things. And I don't know, I think that might be what I'm doing. And when you look at, there's a Politico article called Donald Trump's Year of Living Dangerously, where they just talk about how basically everybody on his staff is just like China, sort of gave him the benefit of the doubt at first and now are just sort of taken aback and are like finding ways to, you know, work around him and keep him isolated from any really consequential decisions. So it seems like the only people who are still left in the camp of, nah, just let's see where he's going with this. He probably has a plan, are, you know, his supporters, and even the people who like work with him and for him are just like, all right, let's find a way to, you know, baby proof this house. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. So we wanted to talk about this trend that is generally emanating from Northern California, or I guess I'm just assuming it's coming from Northern California.
I mean, it's all over. I mean, there are people doing it in Maine and the Pacific Northwest, but a lot of vocal people in the Bay Area.
Right. And it is a health craze sweeping the harebrained idiots of America into raw water. Miles, can you explain what raw water is?
Yeah, so raw water is for people who feel like drinking tap water is full of, you know, like poisonous fluoride and shit like that. So they want to just drink like unfiltered, untreated water that comes from springs and rivers to just really get back to earth because they feel like there's probiotics, which I think the, you know, FDA would call those, you know, pathogens. But yeah, they just feel like there's like health benefits to drinking this raw water. And like one of the most vocal people about it has been that guy who started that Juicero company. That was just like those bags you scan and like it was like a total sham. Like you just squeeze the fucking juice out of the bags. It wasn't really like
It was just anything. A bag of juice that you had to buy a juicer to
from
squeeze
them.
The bag.
Yeah.
That was the thing. I'm 40. So I remember being in college and when Odwalla hit.
Right.
And that was a big thing to see a person walk around with a 12-ounce big old green drink.
Oh, right.
And it wasn't pasteurized.
Right.
So everyone was just thinking, like, you just getting the best. You know, you're taking two poops a day. You know what I mean? Right. Kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You're feeling good. But then you got somebody, then your friend's sick. And then you're like, well, why do you miss chemistry? Because, yeah, he's in the hospital. You know what I mean? he has a tapeworm. You know what I mean? Right. There's always this interesting thing about water where I feel like we're all getting duped. And most people won't challenge it because it's natural. They'll say it's water, it's fruit, it's something from the earth. It's not man-made.
From the earth. It's like drinking from Mother Nature's teat.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't get more pure than that.
Which is not true, by the way. And having filtered water is a fine thing.
But... And actually, in some places, considered a luxury to have not be drinking from streams where they're pathogens.
So, yeah, exactly.
Let's reevaluate.
I think that's where all that water's going to go after it doesn't sell. You're just going to go over there.
Just dump it out in the fucking
Sally
in the park.
Sally's with a pallet full of this water. So be really...
The fluoride thing's like an ancient... not ancient, but a really old American conspiracy theory that, you know, the fluoride is a mind control chemical.
Wait, yeah, when did that come about? Because I heard that.
It's gone as far back as when the government first started putting fluoride in our water, and which I think was early 20th century. The only difference now that, like, most of the water people drink is, you know, bottled water, or a lot of the water people drink, is that Americans have way worse teeth than they used to, is basically, like, that's why the fluoride was put in there in the first place, is because, like, people were suffering from horrible dental health. And so we started putting fluoride in the public drinking water, and we had some of the best teeth on the planet.
Well, there goes that one.
Yeah. And now, we have gone all the way back to drinking in streams. But you have to look at the pictures of the people who are, like, spearheading this. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Just like almost two on the nose. Like they've got like beards and weird, robes and shit. So we want to move on to the Trump administration has announced that they're going after legal weed. And so that was fun while it lasted. Weed was legal for 2 days.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to throw it away.
Miles.
Split one big fire, man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so basically Obama put out a memo saying the federal law and the state law are in conflict. And that's, you know, sort of the way the U.S. government works, is you have, you know, one law that's one thing and local law that's another, and they just like clash and you never get anything accomplished. And that's sort of by design. But so Obama came out and was like, let's just let the states do what they want to do in this case. And Trump is expected to dissolve that statute or whatever in the next 24 hours, which isn't totally surprising because Sessions, his attorney general, has always been like come out and said the only bad thing about the KKK is that they smoke weed at one point. That's like a quote on the record from him. So he thinks marijuana is like heroin, basically.
So this has gotten like a lot of people, especially like in the legal cannabis industry, like, oh my God, what's going on? A lot of the reporting is like, oh my God, they're going to take away our weed. Right. So a friend of mine, Ben Rexius, he's a California attorney. He practices law at Rexius Law here in LA, but he's like a criminal defense and cannabis business lawyer. So we want to bring him on really quick to get his take on exactly like how lawyers are actually looking at this memo. So we're going to call him right now. All right, Ben, are you there?
I am there.
Thank you so much. So, Ben, as a lawyer working in the field of cannabis, what can you tell us? I mean, like, I feel like a lot of people are, you know, kind of freaking out about this, but I feel like from a legal standpoint, it's not going to be as easy to just sort of eliminate all the, you know, recreational weed that is occurring in this country, right?
Absolutely. You know, and it's especially on the scale that it's grown to in the past couple of years. You know, we have more and more states legalizing. We have states like Colorado and Washington that have been doing this since 2014 and have well-established programs. So yeah, to dismantle this would take a feat that I'm not sure that the Department of Justice is up to it. But again, I'm not ruling out anything, because if there's anything that the last year has taught us, is that anything is possible.
So what are sort of the big impediments or obstacles that the Department of Justice would have to overcome to really sort of cause problems in these states with recreational weed laws on their books?
Well, you know, the first issue is one of funding. And, you know, there's the Rohrabacher FAR, which is now the Rohrabacher Blumenauer Amendment, which prevents Congress from appropriating funds to the Department of Justice to go after states with state medical marijuana programs. It's not anything certain. It's part of a budget that's supposed to be approved later this month. So we're not so sure that that's going to be, you know, approved again. And that's kept the government from going after medical marijuana. But it doesn't cover recreational marijuana. And right. The other issue with recreational, although we call it adult use in these states, is that, you know, what allows these states to, you know, have medical marijuana is that it's not to get too much into constitutional law, but preemption. Because the Controlled Substances Act, which is a federal law, deals with recreational drug use. So if the state has medical marijuana, it deals with a separate issue and it's not preempted by state law. So we need to see what's going to happen with the Rohrabacher Blumenauer Amendment. So there's the issue of funding. We also need to look at the memo, the new Sessions memo, a little one-pager that was released today. And the language is very interesting. And without getting into the details, basically what it appears to do is it gives basically U.S. attorneys the discretion to go after medical, you know, and recreational cannabis businesses. But it's not an absolute green light. But in combination with rescinding the Cole memo, the Ogden memo, and a bunch of other memos, which basically told the government, the federal government, to keep out absent any, you know, concern, you know, there being any issues with minors getting cannabis, you know, it's all up in the air. So,
and also, you know, do you foresee, like, for example, DEA agents coming through a medical marijuana dispensary and like arresting people? Obviously, the optics look bad, but it seems, sounds like too, there are a lot of states like AGs, attorneys general, that are also like talking real crazy. They're like, yo, don't come in here with that because we will fight for this.
Absolutely. You know, and the DEA has not been raiding dispensaries for a while, and there's a big difference now. Back when these raids were going on in 2007, 2008, these weren't licensed businesses.
Right.
We now have, in states like Colorado and Washington, licensed businesses. So, you know, the optics are never good when you have the DEA coming in and crushing little businesses, but you know, it's especially bad when, you know, it's state-sanctioned business. And these are businesses that are paying taxes. And so you not only have the business owners being aggrieved, but you now have the state itself being aggrieved because they're going after businesses that are providing them with tax revenue and are licensees through a state program.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a big... big difference here now.
Yeah, so it seems like it's an uphill battle.
How many states is marijuana like legal recreationally, by the way?
So I haven't done the exact count. I forget. But, you know, it's Colorado, Washington, now California. I think it's about 12, but we have more and more on the way. You know, for instance, in Vermont, it's going to be the first instance of a state marijuana legal marijuana program being instituted by the legislature. Most of these have been through,
propositions.
The voter initiatives, exactly, right. Ballot initiatives. So now we have states taking this issue by the reins and adopting it themselves. So the momentum is picking up. That's the big point for legalized marijuana, both adult use and medical. So, you know, this is just something that goes completely against the will of the people of the United States. And, you know, the real big issue is that this is a state's rights issue, and which states' rights is a huge conservative issue.
Yeah.
Don't tread on me.
Yeah. And I mean, I have, I know somebody for whom this was the line, like they were down with Trump up to this point, and then they were like, no, fuck this. They cannot do this.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Don't tread on me. Don't tread on weed.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And I've been saying, you know, all along that this is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And, you know, I've said that Jeff Sessions doesn't have the political capital to do this. You know, he's all tied up in the Russia investigation. So what's very interesting is that, you know, not too long ago, about a couple weeks ago, the Department of Justice rescinded a number of guidance memos, but the Cole memo and the Ogden memo were not one of them. So it's very curious that he's just now rescinding them. And it really speaks to the possibility of this being some type of political ruse to detract attention away from the really, really bad news that's coming down on the Trump administration, you know, regarding Steve Bannon and, you know, my goodness, basically everything that's happening. I mean, where do you even begin?
It looks like, and the pun is intended, a smokescreen. So,
It's good to know. I really feel like a big reason for this is that CNN did that story. CNN was like the person who like couldn't hang and like, you know, went to a party and like the woman had like marijuana earrings on and were like, was like holding a bong. And then Fox News was like outraged about it. And that's where the president takes all of his guidance from on policy. So
absolutely. Yeah. As he should.
Right. Yeah. No, they're brilliant. Well, thank you so much, fam. This was very
absolutely.
All right, Ben.
And you know, it's my pleasure to be of any assistance in these complicated and tumultuous times. But you know, the will of the people will persist, but we have to keep fighting and fight for what's right.
All right.
Awesome, man.
Thanks, Ben.
You got it. Take care.
All right. All right. So it seems like just basically after that conversation and sort of what we've been reading, like, yes, this is a change of policy or a shift in sort of what the directives are, but this isn't going to be an overnight thing. Like, they already opened up Pandora's box, great strain, by the way, and they're not going to be able to close it. So, yes, there's more to come. And obviously, it would be so unpopular. Like, the sentiment for legalizing weed is, like, at an all-time high. So I just can't – it's hard to imagine this being a very popular battle.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. It means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.